Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. NASA announced last week that researchers had uncovered 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a red dwarf star. These planets could potentially sustain life because of their proximity to this star that's not nearly as hot as our own sun. It's a star we've known about for nearly 2 decades and is certainly familiar to University of Delaware physics and astronomy professor John Geesis, who discovered the star 18 years ago. In this week's Enlighten Me, Delaware Public Media science reporter Katie Pikus talks to Geesis about the star and his reaction to these 7 planets found surrounding it.
Dr. Geesis, this star that you discovered in 1999, that's a red dwarf star, correct?
That's right.
So what sort of properties does it have?
This is basically about the smallest type of star that can exist. It's about physically the size of Jupiter, but it's probably 100 times the mass of Jupiter. So everything is packed in very densely. And so it has nuclear fusion in the core, just like the sun does. But because it's so small, it's very dim and doesn't give off very much light.
And when you discovered the star, did you see or suspect the planets orbiting it?
No, not at all. We did always say that it was important to find red dwarfs because someday someone might find planets around them, but we had no idea that this particular star was special or really that, you know, that it would be feasible to find planets the way that the TRAPPIST group did.
So when NASA made the announcement uncovering 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting that star, what was your reaction?
I was very excited and happy, I mean, and kind of astonished, right? There were already, you know, had been an announcement that it had 3 planets, but for there to be 7 is really quite amazing. The same group had previously announced that there were signs of a few planets, and then NASA went out and discovered there weren't 3, there were actually 7.
So ever since the announcement was made, what has gone through your mind as far as what these planets could be capable of?
I think the exciting thing is that because these planets are transiting, we have a lot of hope that with the James Webb Space Telescope that's coming up, we'll be able to learn whether these planets really do have atmospheres and whether they are, you know, Earth-like, you know, in which case they really would be habitable, or if they're more like Venus, which is, you know, a hellish, you know, awful place. Or Mars, which is cold and frozen and has hardly an atmosphere at all. And, of course, we really know next to nothing about the planets. We know that they're about the size of Earth and that they must be rocky, but we don't know very much about what conditions are like on them. And so I think that it's going to be a very big effort in the upcoming years for people to try to figure out what these planets are really like.
And what do you think of the possibility that these planets could sustain life?
Well, I'll say that it is a real possibility. On the other hand, I would, if you, you know, had gun to my head, I would bet against it. You know, there's too much we don't know about what's the effect of being so close to a red dwarf star. The good news is these planets are close enough that they're getting enough light to be the right warmth and temperature for having, you know, liquid water and oceans and lakes and ponds and things like that. But that doesn't mean they actually do. There are a lot of reasons you could dream up for why everything might go wrong on the planet, and that even though it's the right size, it won't, you know, actually be livable. We're just going to have to see, but it's exciting to find out that, you know, planets like this, you know, really do exist and they're nearby and we can study them further, and we'll find out whether these planets really do look like they at least have an atmosphere, whether they have oceans. You know, eventually information like that can be learned.
And ever since NASA made the announcement, are you going to continue research on the star now, or has that been something that you've already been continuing over the last few years?
Yes. This star is being studied right now with the Kepler Space Telescope in what's called its K2 mission. And so I had already been planning to look at the star, as I must say many other astronomers are. Everyone from the public gets to use the data equally. But so my graduate student and I are already making plans for what we can do with that data to measure about the properties of the star.
And what is the name of the star?
The original name was 2MASS J2306-2928-0502285, which tells astronomers precisely where in the sky it's located, with a unique designation, and that it was discovered with the 2MASS survey. But, of course, nobody likes names like that, even astronomers. And now that it was the first set of planets discovered with what was called the TRAPPIST survey, everyone calls the star TRAPPIST-1, and I think that's the name that's going to stick for the future.
And I believe you just mentioned it's being studied right now with the Kepler Space Telescope. Was this the technology that you used in the 1990s?
No, the technology we used in the 1990s was that there were two ground-based telescopes that were built and funded by NASA and the National Science Foundation, one in Arizona and one in Chile. They were equipped with the latest in infrared cameras, so this was the first time this was practical, and we took pictures of the entire sky. And that's how we were able to discover nearby stars that hadn't been seen before, because if you knew where to point, it would be easy to study the star. But, of course, if you don't know about the star yet, you don't know where it's located. So the idea was that we were mapping out the solar neighborhood and finding where the nearby stars are with that technology. And so that was not a telescope in space. It had originally been proposed to be in space, apparently, in the 1980s, but someone realized it was feasible to do it from Arizona for one-tenth the cost. And so that's what they did.
Oh, so it was really like mapping out the solar neighborhood, as you said.
Yeah, so that was what we did, right? So we produced, you know, a catalog that lists, you know, 500 million stars, something like that, you know, and all of their locations on the sky. That's why we need so many digits to describe the name of each object. But then I went ahead and I found that this particular star of the 500 million is actually extremely close to us and is a dim red dwarf, you know, not an ordinary star on the other side of the galaxy like most of them are. So we identified that this star was special and was a close neighbor to the sun, and that was why it was interesting to go then look for planets when this other group, you know, led by a group of Belgian astronomers, found the planets.
How do you think that the discovery of these seven planets orbiting this star maybe paved the way for future discoveries?
Yeah, I think that the discovery that rocky planets, you know, exist around this star, and not just, you know, one or two, but seven, sort of hints to us that there must be many, many, many planets around red dwarf stars. And so there's a lot of excitement in the astronomical community about looking now for planets around red dwarfs. You know, 10 years ago when they were designing the original Kepler mission, people mostly thought about planets around stars like the sun. But these smaller, dimmer stars turn out to be really quite wonderful in terms of having large numbers of rocky planets around them, you know, as this discovery indicates.
I think that's all of my questions, but is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, I think that's it. I mean, it's very exciting. Everyone is you know, as thrilled. The astronomers are as thrilled about this as the general public is. That's what I would say.
Did you watch NASA's conference the other day?
I wasn't able to watch it, but I read all the materials and looked at the, you know, the pictures and stuff that they had. They were pretty spectacular.
But did you know that this discovery was even, you know, on its way as a part of this community, or were you equally shocked with the announcement?
Well, I did not officially know, but news sort of leaked on Twitter the day before because I guess a newspaper somewhere had posted it early. I had actually seen it a day early because someone in England, you know, had put it and it was going around the internet a little bit. But I had no official knowledge of it at all, no. It is fun because, you know, you do these things and sometimes, you know, you're like, well, it's just another star or whatever, you know. But for them to, you know, turn out to be special in some way, you know, really makes you feel like you contributed, right, to the march of progress.
Thanks to our Katie Pikus and UD Physics and Astronomy Professor John Gieses for enlightening us this week. And that's a wrap on this week's edition of The Green. These stories and interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website and on iTunes. We'd also like to hear from you. Send us your feedback and story ideas using our Facebook page, on Twitter at TheGreenDE, or by emailing us at TheGreen@DelawarePublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make today's show possible. Delaware Public Media's Mark Earhart, James Dawson, James Morrison, Megan Pauly, and Katie Pikus, as well as our president and station manager, Casey Houts. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Burns saying thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground.